And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. My name is Jamie Waste, and I'll be your host for today's program with Jeff Brown producing. Following National Native News, Emma Davis, artist in residence at The Canvas, will be here along with Mercedes Munoz, and they're going to be talking about the upcoming First Friday show and other activities at The Canvas. Julie Neihart will be here with details about next week's Suicide Prevention Week. We'll take a ride on the air in the earthquake simulator, and we'll find out about Saturday's Whale Watch benefit cruise for the Juno Symphony. Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music and More up next on KTOO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A small First Nation in northern Manitoba is reeling after learning that two men in the community were switched at birth. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it's the second such case at the same government-run hospital to emerge in less than a year.
For years, people in Norway House Cree Nation gossiped about why David Tate and Leon Swanson didn't look much like their parents. Now they know why. The men who were born just days apart in the same hospital have been devastated since learning they've been with the wrong family for decades after being switched at birth. Both men, now in their 40s, say they want answers. DNA tests have confirmed that the two friends grew up in the wrong family. Nearly a year ago, two other men from a nearby First Nation also discovered through DNA tests that they were also switched at birth in the same hospital and in the same year. Manitoba's former Aboriginal Affairs Minister, Eric Robinson, says the mistakes are criminal.
The rest of us can only imagine what these two innocent families are going to have to experience in the foreseeable future. This is not an acceptable situation for the families and for the communities who have had to deal with these consequences.
Robinson has demanded that the federal government launch an independent investigation into what happened. He also wants counseling for the two families. Meanwhile, the federal health minister, Jane Philpott, called the circumstances appalling, and she said there will be a third-party investigation. On a positive note, the families of the latest switch say they are going to become one large family, adding that they've been a family from the beginning, but just didn't know it. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Leaders of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and 8 Washington State tribes gathered along the banks of the Cannonball River in North Dakota Tuesday to oppose the Dakota Access Pipeline. The Washington tribes are among more than 150 tribes and First Nations to sign resolutions and letters of support for Standing Rock. Tribal leaders say they're seeking protection of the environment. Tribes across the country are also donating supplies to help people at camps in the area who are seeking to stop the pipeline. Video streamed online this morning by tribal radio station KLND showed a group demonstrating at a construction site near Mandan, where a man attached himself to equipment as fire and law enforcement officers worked to get him down and detain him. South Dakota educators are looking at ways to improve low ACT scores among Native students, both in average scores and numbers of students who take the exam. As South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports, the state's director of Indian Education points to several contributing factors.
In the past school year, 450 Native American seniors in South Dakota took the ACT College Preparedness Test before graduation. Only 4% met benchmarks in four core areas. Mato Standing High is South Dakota's Director of Indian Education. He says the low participation and low scores are definite concerns.
You know, if you look at the ACT test in itself, only 7% of our American Indian students in South Dakota took the test. That's concerning. That tells us that only, 7% are potentially looking at, going to post-secondary education. I think that number lies more when you break it down even further to see that it's only about maybe 2%, and that might be stretching it just a bit, of our American Indian students in South Dakota actually attend college. And out of that 2%, the graduation percentage of that 2% is even lower.
Standing High says there are many issues that lead to small participation in ACT tests and the low numbers that come from those who do write the exam. He says while class attendance is a major issue, one of the first steps in improving the scores is making the students believe they can be successful. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm. National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the 6th annual Striking Eagle Basketball Tournament and Education Fair beginning December 28th. Information on the event and services at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And I'd like to welcome into the studio Emma Davidson, who is the artist in residence at the Canvas, and Mercedes Munoz, the new artistic coordinator at the Canvas. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Good to see you here. And we've got a couple things to talk about. I think we have a first Friday opening, Emma, and we'll talk about that first. And then, Mercedes, maybe we'll just talk a little bit about the Canvas and other things that are coming up, because you guys are always cranking out stuff all year long. So first, Emma, congratulations. You have your own individual solo showing coming up, right?
Yes. Thank you. It's really exciting. It's kind of a dream come true. This would be my first solo show, which is something I've worked for, I guess, my entire life at this point.
So I think a lot of people in Juneau are familiar with First Friday and coming downtown and getting to see art and what have you. So for people who come to the Canvas to see your particular art, maybe just start by describing, you may very well be a multimedia, multi-art, you know, kind of person, but what is it that you're going to be showing on Friday, or over the course of this next month, really? Is it a showing that's up for a month?
Yep, it'll be up for a month. And I do kind of hang out in two different worlds. I very much enjoy printmaking as well as fibers, and that is what will be reflected in the show. I have quite a few silk paintings, some standalone silk paintings, and then some that are more mixed with embroidery, and then I will also be having a series of prints that have been embellished with colored pencil or gold leaf, different mediums as well.
Are these works that you've produced since you've been here in Juneau, or are these works that you've had for many years and you're finally getting a chance to put them up for people to see?
No, everything was made here in Juneau. I might have come with a couple of drawings that I used as a jumping off point, but everything was created here in the studio. I've been here since February working on stuff, and I'm glad to be able to finally put it up on the wall and see it all come together. A lot of it is Juneau-inspired, but really, I would say even more so just inspired from everywhere I've been in the world. I'm very nature-influenced, and it's important, no matter where I am, to immerse myself in that, and it's reflected in my artwork.
And how many pieces will be on display?
I have, I have three series that are going to be in the show. Each one have 4 to 5 pieces, so about 11, I guess.
And you mentioned silk. Did you mention, was there another fabric that you mentioned? Or?
No, just silk for fabric, and then my prints are on a cotton rag paper.
Are these large pieces, small pieces?
Kind of small to large. I'll have 4 pieces that literally go from the ceiling to the floor, and then I'll have pieces that are medium-sized up on their walls, and so some smaller prints.
Nice variety of
things. Yeah.
So, and as an artist in residence, how do you become an artist in residence? How did you become this particular artist in residence?
Well, I was applying for different teaching artist positions, and I came across this one in my search and immediately, you know, fell in love with what the Canvas does as an organization, and I applied and was interviewed and was excited to be asked to come join them for the year.
So Mercedes, we're gonna talk about some of the things that are ongoing at the Canvas. But before we do that, so you're a part of that, Emma. Yeah, as an artist in residence, you are teaching, you are doing classes.
Yeah. So I'm teaching. I get the privilege to work with the artists during the day, and then as well as our community members in the evenings. We do community classes.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really great.
And what have you enjoyed the most so far about your time here in Juneau at the Canvas?
I think, you know, meeting our different artists and just learning from them as much as I hope to be able to teach them. It's just a really great collaboration between people.
Mm-hmm. So, Mercedes, congratulations on your new role. I know you've been affiliated with the Canvas for a long time, and you are quite the artist in your own right. So you're the new artistic coordinator. So what does that mean at the Canvas?
So I am scheduling classes, working with contract teachers, making sure our artists have all the materials they need, so ordering those, hanging First Friday shows. So I'll be helping Emma get ready for that. We're going to hang tomorrow, which I'm very excited about, and then the reception for her show will be opening tomorrow at 4:30 and going till 7:00. So definitely stop by and see that. It's going to be beautiful. Her work is very colorful, and it'll be a nice transition into the fall.
Mm-hmm. Anything else about the First Friday showing? Because I want to hear a little bit more about what the Canvas has coming up in the weeks or the months ahead. But anything else about this particular show that you want to highlight here for folks?
Well, you have to see it for yourself. So I would say please come down and take a look at it and join us for the reception. We'll have refreshments and we'll be there from 4:30 to 7:00. And like Emma said, her work will be up all month long, but it's really beautiful and striking in person, and got to come in and see it.
Yeah, and I think for folks who haven't done a First Friday, it's a lot of fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, especially the opening night.
Definitely.
So the Canvas, what's going on in the weeks ahead, or what anything special you want to talk about?
Right. So we have a lot going on this fall, in particular September. First of all, we have our full fall schedule of classes posted online now, so you can check that out at thecanvasarts.org. You can sign up online as well. And Emma's teaching a lot of classes. She's teaching silk painting classes for both kids and adults. She's going to be doing a felted landscapes class and a felted critters class, which is particularly fun for both kids and adults. And she showed me how to make one, and they're really fun. So we have a lot of classes that Emma will be teaching this fall. And then we also have different classes. We have some ceramic classes, we have painting, drawing, metalsmithing, jewelry making. We have a class coming up in September, a workshop on stretching canvases and building frame supports. So if you're a working artist, that'll be a great skill to learn. We have printmaking classes, all kinds of stuff happening. So the classes are all online, and you can check those out and get more information there. We also have a printed off version, little booklet. If you ever come into the Canvas, you can grab one of those. And also a new kind of class we have starting up this Saturday, and it will be going every other Saturday through the fall, and that's going to be a Saturday drawing group. And so with that, we'll have a live model, and it'll be from 4:45 until 8 p.m. every other Saturday. And so that's just drop-in, or you can sign up online, and so that'll be a fun opportunity, too. We've had a lot of people ask about that. So that's what we have for classes this fall. And then in addition to that, we have a new studio membership that we're opening up. As I'm sure some of you know, we have the ceramic studio membership, which is a monthly. You come in and use the space, and there are certain materials that are provided. We're also going to be opening up now a general studio membership, so that will include our room that's more for 2D art, so we'll have space for storing work, like the drawing rack, use of the easels, use of reusable tools like paintbrushes, drawing boards, the printing press, drawing racks, all of that, and that's $70 a month, or you can do $100 for the month if you want to do both ceramics and the drawing side. So that's what we have coming up with the studio membership. And then the only other thing we have is coming up on September 22nd, we have a really cool fundraiser dinner happening at the Rookery, and they hosted that for the last couple of years. And so that's going to be happening September 22nd at 5 p.m., and you can get your tickets at the Rookery there, and all the proceeds will go to the Canvas. And that'll be an Asian-inspired meal with wines courtesy of the Odom Corporation. So we're really excited about that event coming up, too.
I knew there was a lot to talk about. You guys are great.
I'm out of breath now.
Just another one of those institutions in the capital city that just cranks out an enormous amount of support and service and opportunities for people. We're getting close to the end here. Emma, I just want to circle back to you. Did you, growing up, did you ever imagine that you were going to be an artist in residence in Juneau, Alaska, or in different places around the country? Did you have a sense that art, being an artist was your future or a big part of your future?
Well, being creative and drawing and art in general was always a big part of my life. But I would say, I mean, 8-year-old Emma probably wouldn't. I've been like, yes, I'm like definitely going to be in, you know, Alaska.
How about
having a show
15-year-old or... Emma or 18-year-old Emma? At some point, did you start having a sense for I'm going to be doing this?
Yeah, I would say definitely as I grew up and got older, I became more focused and kind of just, I don't know, that's what I wanted to do. Really, there was nothing else.
And you're doing it, which is great.
Yeah.
And Mercedes, same question for you. Did you have a sense of that art was going to be it at some early age, or is this something that just kind of recently you've gone, you know what, I'm really into this, and I think I should try to, you know, be even more serious about it?
Well, I guess it was definitely always a dream. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it would actually become a reality, and I got a degree in ceramics, not thinking that I would find a job in that field, but it was the only thing I really wanted to do, and I got the only job in Juneau that I was qualified for.
Uniquely
for
qualified
that.
For.
Yeah. And then that transitioned into just working at the Canvas longer. And so I'm very grateful to be a part of the Canvas. It's such a wonderful organization, and I love going to work every day. It's a great group of people.
Emma Davidson, artist in residence at the Canvas with your own personal solo show, first Friday. I guess the reception is tomorrow night, right?
It will be Friday night.
Friday night.
Friday
sorry.
From 4:30 to 7 p.m.
Right. Yeah. And then it'll be up for the month. So congratulations with that. Mercedes, good to see you. Thanks for coming in, both of you.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Bird Note. That prehistoric-sounding call is from a great blue heron. This tall, stately bird is commonly seen standing alone on beaches, in marshes, on docks and pilings, even on tree branches, watching, waiting. Now, from earlier this summer, the raucous sound of a colony of nesting great blue herons. Herons collect into groups for nesting, constructing their Spartan stick nests in adjoining trees. Several nests may be crammed into one tree. As many as 60 nests in a colony can create quite a frenzy. Nesting in large colonies helps protect the young from predators. But by this time of year, the adults and gangly young have left the nests to take up solitary lives along beaches, marshes, lake edges, and rivers. After all the togetherness of the nesting colonies, the herons spend the off-season by themselves, a pattern that is the reverse of many other species. During fall and winter, they defend the areas where they feed as adamantly as other birds defend their nesting territories in spring. The herons challenge and scare away intruders, including other great blue herons, by sounding this call. It may sound strange, but it's one beautiful bird. Got a photo? Share it with our listeners. Begin at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Support comes from the Alaska Robotics Gallery, offering art that features narwhals, squid, and flying whales, located at 220 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at alaskarobotics.com.
This is how people describe Donald Trump.
Race baiting.
Charismatic.
Pathological liar.
Larger than life.
And Hillary Clinton?
Policy wonk.
scorned, strong female.
Very private person.
Seems like a terrible human.
I'm Rachel Martin. Join me for a special broadcast, The Making of Clinton and Trump, Character in the 2016 Election, from NPR News.
Thursday at 7 on KTOO News, Juno.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 31st of August, 2016. It's the birthday of Maria Montessori, born in Chiaravalle, Italy, 1870, studied engineering when she was just 13 years old, went to a technical school, and then decided to pursue medicine, earned a medical degree, the first woman in Italy to do that. As a doctor, she worked with children with special needs, and she became interested in education. And she believed that children were not blank slates, but that they each had inherent individual gifts, and it was a teacher's job to help children find those gifts rather than dictating what a child ought to learn. She emphasized independence, self-directed learning, learning from peers, and she used child-sized tables and chairs in the classroom. She was opposed to the fascist regime of Mussolini during World War II, so Maria Montessori was exiled from Italy. She spent time in India and then in Holland, died in 1952. She wrote many books about her philosophy of education, including The Montessori Method, came out in 1912. It was on this day, 1422, Henry VI became King of England at the age of 9 months. He was Henry V's only child. The nobles from around the land set up a regency council to make decisions until the infant was old enough to do that. William Shakespeare wrote 3 plays about Henry VI. They were among his earliest plays, and they were huge box office successes, hardly ever performed anywhere today. It's the birthday of William Shawn, the longtime editor of the New Yorker magazine, born William Chawn in Chicago, 1907, started working at the magazine as a reporter in 1933, took over as editor in 1951, and stayed until he was forced to resign in 1987. A small, shy, extremely courteous man, who edited J.D. Salinger, John Updike, Jamaica Kincaid, Elizabeth Bishop, Philip Roth, and Truman Capote. Here's a poem for today by Margaret Hasse entitled Cross. At concerts that I did not want to attend with my mother, I learned to practice any number of nuisances possible in the place of silence. I wore a cross to vex my mother, a Unitarian, then ran the pendant back and forth along my necklace chain like a loud zipper. During a pianissimo passage, I unwrapped waxy paper from a caramel, then coughed as if feathers tickled my throat. I'm paying for past trespasses now. To my own teenage child, I have become the grand annoyer. When I ask him how school went today, or please pass the butter, I annoy him, because it's none of my business, because I don't need butter, you already weigh too much. When I laugh, I irritate him by showing my teeth. I bother him when I'm sitting around in my pajamas. He hates the color pink. It looks annoying on me. And when I wear polish on my fingernails, he says my hands are dipped in blood. And when I leave my nails alone, the pale, bare hands look like dough, especially when they reach out to hug him, which constitutes unwanted touch. And he says, "What is your problem, anyhow?" A poem by Margaret Hasse, Cross, from her collection Earth's Appetite, published by Noden Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 24 minutes past the hour, and you're tuned to Juno Afternoon. Next, live from next door to Nimbus, is Jamie Waste here as part of the earthquake event, which is happening right now. Jamie, you're on the air.
Hi, Jeff. Hey, the timing is perfect because Jeremy, who's running the Alaska simulator, just gave a briefing. There's four of us in our seats. I'm not sure I got the entire briefing, but I'm in my seat, and I'm ready to go. And I think the next thing that's going to happen live on K2 Radio, Jeremy, are you ready to start this thing, or did you have more to say?
No, we can start it up, and you guys will experience about a 7.1 earthquake. It'll last about 30 seconds, and let's get it started.
All right, here we go. Earthquake time, live on the radio. I guess I'm supposed to... here we go.
Please hold the hand grips at all times. This is not a ride. It is an experience.
Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. Oh! You know, I think in a real earthquake, I wouldn't be whooping like this. I would be totally scared. Totally violent. This would be very unpleasant experience if it were your home or a building or a car. Oh, okay.
So during that type of shaking, you wouldn't be able to walk or run anyways. So the best thing you can do to protect yourself is to drop, cover, and hold. Get on the ground before you're thrown to the ground. Protect yourself from those falling objects. Hold on to that cover. Hold on to the back of your neck and your head until the shaking stops. It's really the best way you can protect yourself during an earthquake.
And how? And what was the magnitude of that one?
That was around a 7.1. Now, mechanically, we can simulate something that goes back and forth and up and down. A real earthquake can be much more dynamic, much more violent than what we can simulate with our machine.
And that's clearly strong enough to be breaking buildings and causing all kinds of damage.
That's right. 7.0 earthquakes, those are places like Christchurch, New Zealand. They really tore up their infrastructure, 100% loss on their water, electrical, sewer, gas distribution. Places like Haiti, they had widespread building collapse where over 25,000 people lost their lives. So 7.0 earthquakes are tremendous. Here in Alaska, we average an 8.0 or greater every 13 years, and we have the capability of earthquakes like the 1964 Good Friday earthquake, which was a 9.2. second largest earthquake ever recorded.
And this is one of the only simulators around, is that correct?
Well, actually, down in Lower 48, there's several simulators. This is Alaska's only earthquake simulator. This is the first time that we've been able to visit Southeast Alaska. We're going to be visiting eight Alaskan communities, Skagway, Juneau, Sitka, Petersburg, Wrangell, Prince Wales Island, Ketchikan, and then Haines.
Very good. Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
So, Jeff, for people who are not familiar with what's going on here, this simulator is sitting right next to Nimbus. So right there at the new Alaska Museum, right next to Nimbus. And there's a big line of people here, a lot of kids here ready to get in the simulator to actually experience what an earthquake might feel like. And this is going to go on, I think, until 4:30 this afternoon, and then it repeats again tomorrow. And in the K2 building, there's other things related to local emergency planning that are going on. The City and Borough of Juneau, their local emergency planning committee has a bunch of booths and information and different educational things for people of all ages to come down and learn about different aspects of emergency preparedness here in the capital city. So important information, come on by to K2 this afternoon and or tomorrow, and in particular, take a ride in the Alaska simulator.
Jamie, was it fun?
Well, I don't know if I'd describe it as fun. I mean, it was kind of fun that I was trying to do something on the radio, but then I realized in the middle of it that I was pretty uncomfortable and I needed to hold on, and I was reminded that if you're sitting there at home, you know, and suddenly something like that happens, that's not fun. That's totally scary and totally dangerous. And so that's my takeaway.
So the hours again are from 11 a.m. today and tomorrow, until it goes until 7 p.m.
Ah, 7 p.m. Very good. Yeah, it's easy to spot, and I just recommend it. It's funny, we don't, right here in Juneau and Southeast, I think it's a little easy to think we're not too earthquake prone, but boy, we, Pacific Rim, we're certainly in it, and I've lived through a couple of big ones in California, so if you want to have a sense for what that level, what that magnitude actually feels like, this is a unique opportunity to do that.
Well, also hanging around outside the KTUO building is the Salvation Army's new mobile kitchen units, and they've been giving away hot dogs today. And also is the Capital City Fire and Rescue's Stop, Drop, and Roll house that they bring to several events that kids might be able to go inside the house and prepare themselves in case there's a fire in the living area.
Yeah, great opportunity. Come on down to K2, and hats off to City and Borough of Juneau and the other sponsors involved with making this kind of information available to the community. And Jeff, I'm heading back upstairs to continue with the rest of the show.
All right, thanks, Jamie.
Well, you never do nothing. Support for KTOO programming is provided by Arnold Liebelt, candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly. Paid for by Liebelt for Assembly, P.O. Box 240881 Douglas. Steve Ricci, Chair.
And with Jerry Garcia and the sounds of the Grateful Dead fading into the background with the Shakedown Street, I'd like to welcome into the studio Laura Haywood, Executive Director for the Juneau Symphony.
Welcome. Hi, Jamie.
Welcome back to KTOO.
Thank you so much.
You're here. Well, we've got there's plenty to talk about with the symphony, but you've got one of your major, I think, one of your major fundraising events coming up.
Yep,
and
this
it's the
weekend.
Annual wildlife cruise. So, yeah,
right.
Tell us about it.
It's going to be a lot of fun. You get to hop on an Allen Marine catamaran and go check out the whales. And it's Saturday, September 3rd in the afternoon. I'll give you more details in a minute. We'll have some lovely chamber music by, we've got some, our new Master of Arts in Teaching students are going to be playing for us. And it's a string ensemble. And we'll have a wine tasting by Specialty Imports. John DeCherney is bringing us a bunch of wine. And a ton of food that the board of directors of the Juneau Symphony makes and brings, and it's really quite a spread. So, and I've been promised that there will be a ton of whales, so that is the plan.
They're out there.
Yes, and I don't know if you've seen the weather forecast for this weekend, but on my phone, Saturday is the day that has just a little sun on it, no clouds at all. So
it does look promising. Yes. Looks dry and perhaps sunny for a few days to go. And get out on the water, it's almost always drier and sunnier than it is downtown.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
So this is an annual event. So how many years now? Do you know?
Oh, I have no idea. Way predates me.
Yeah.
So
it's been going for a while.
Yes, many years, and it's always a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, so that means it's successful because the symphony keeps deciding we should do it again.
Yeah, we have one other feature, and that is a longtime Juneau symphony supporter, Mary Wilson, who is a biologist in town. Many people know her, is going to be our naturalist, so you can go up and ask her any question you want. And it's always great. She knows so much about whales and birds especially. So
I'm guessing for people who've done this before, they already have a good idea of what's involved. But for somebody who's never done this before, so they're going to buy a ticket. They're going to get on the catamaran.
Yes.
Kind of describe the 3 or 4 hours or however long it is, the kinds of things that are going to unfold over the course of the cruise.
Well, we take off at 2. It'll start boarding at 1:30. And you get on, and then, of course, you have to go find yourself the best seat you possibly can. But people are always moving around. So even if you didn't find the greatest seat, you can always get one.
And this is one of the big, comfortable Allen Marine catamaran boats.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, there's a lot of room to move and be up on the top deck and all that kind of stuff.
And the first thing you will notice is this: all these tables in the middle where the aisle is, and they are loaded, groaning with delicious food. And it's all covered up till we get out a little ways, and then we open it up, and people really chow down. And then what we do is motor out, see some whales, and then stop, cut the motors, and then the music starts. And it has happened that the whales will upstage the musicians, but they're always very cheerful about it. If you suddenly have a breach happening right behind the musicians, we usually... Everybody stops and turns.
They're accommodating.
Yeah. There's all these photos, you know, old photos from cruises past where all the musicians just are shocked, their mouths open, going, "Oh my God, a whale."
So you motor out there, people are eating, and then you stop and you cut the motors and the music starts.
Yeah.
So the music. Tell us about the music.
Well, let me just preface it by saying we have a partnership with the UAS and the JAM program, Juneau Alaska Music Matters, which is this great string program that happens in the elementary schools in the valley. And UAS, these students are enrolled. They're getting their Masters of Arts in Teaching, and they're musicians. They'll be playing with us in the symphony, and then they do their student teaching with the JAM program, teaching strings. And this year we have 3 of them. And one is a longtime Juneau resident. In fact, she's our principal cello, and her name is Megan Johnson. And then we have a bass player named Andy Israelson and a violist named Katie Croco. So the 3 of them will play, but they thought it'd be nice to have a violin as well. So Sophia Butler, who was in that program last year, earned her master's and is still in Juneau. will be joining them. So those are our four musicians.
Mm-hmm. And how long is that portion of the cruise?
I think I told them to be ready for about 45 minutes worth of music. So we'll see how much they bring. And they'll be breaking up into, I know that Katie and Andy, the viola and the bass are kind of a funny pairing, but they have some music that they brought to Juneau with them that are duets for those two instruments. And then I think there will also be trios with the cello, the violin, and the viola. So, yeah, I don't exactly know what they're going to do, but it's always interesting.
That's part of the charm, yeah. I imagine. Yes. Are any of these repeat performers? Are
well,
they coming
just
back?
Sophia, because she was the she was a student in the MAT program last year. So they launched, you know, the last year's cohort launched in this cruise also.
Right. Right.
So
very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so then there's the music portion.
Yeah.
And then what happens?
Well, then there's the whale.
By then everybody's really happy and feeling very good.
Well, you know, there's just been a lot of whale activity usually.
Yeah.
And I just remember last year just being stunned by how just nonstop it was. I don't want to promise anything because you never know. But last year it was just phenomenal. And, you know, we were disappointed. Our conductor, Troy Quinn, couldn't come this year, but he was there last year. And I just remember he'd be having these really intense conversations with, say, our principal horn player, and they'd be going at it, and then all of a sudden, whoop, look around, oh, my God, and then they'd get right back into it. So it's just kind of a backdrop, all these whales. So
wonderful
yeah,
backdrop,
this is my
let alone the scenery.
This will be my first, you know, getting out on the water this summer, so I'm really glad I get a chance to. I mean, after it was such a great summer, and I didn't get out really at
so,
all.
So eventually, the cruise has to go back to port.
Yes, it'll
so it's
be
about
over at 5.
4 hours, three.
No, it's 3 hours.
Three,
2 to 5.
Yeah, 3 hours.
So then we'll pull in at 5. And,
oh, then people still have time for other evening activities.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Very good. Okay, so we want to talk a little bit more about Juneau Symphony and upcoming events. But for this particular annual fundraising event, which sounds like a blast, how do people learn more about it?
Okay, well, come to our website, which is junosymphony.org, and there's a headline on there that says Wildlife Cruise. So just click the button on there, and it'll tell you all about it and have a little link to buy tickets. So we're getting really close to the end here on tickets. We probably have 20 left.
Wow.
25.
That's great.
Tops. Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Odds are pretty good. It's going to sell out. Does it sell out every year?
Well, it has the last two that I've been involved. So,
And Alan Marine gets thanks here, I assume, and
absolutely.
Specialty Imports.
Thank
and,
you for saying that. Absolutely. They're wonderful sponsors. Yeah. And certainly Alan Marine donates a portion of the normal charge to us, which is wonderful. And same with Specialty Imports. They come and do it. They're hoping you can order the wine that you taste there, and they make it really easy. You fill out a little form, and then you go to, Douglas Breeze Inn or somewhere and pick it up in a couple of weeks. And he's always got good, interesting wine. So.
And he's always very interesting.
Yes, John is entertaining. Yes.
And entertaining. Okay, anything else about the cruise you want to talk about, the upcoming cruise
just
here?
Come. Yeah. Join us. We'd love to have you.
Very good. So. Okay, Juneau Symphony, fall season approaches.
Yes.
What's up?
Well, we're so excited. So this will be our music director's second season with us, Troy Quinn. Last season was just, you know, a huge success. People really, really responded to him and the programs that he did. So our first concert is in the fall, October 29th and 30th, so right before Halloween, and he's got some great stuff programmed, including this concerto for French horn and strings, and the guy that's coming to play it, his name is Jim Thatcher, and apparently he is the go-to guy in Hollywood to play on film scores, and he's going to give some sort of a talk or workshop. We haven't quite worked out what it'll be, and I think he's got some really great stories to tell. And the big work for that is also is Schumann's Symphony, Fourth Symphony, and that will have the whole orchestra. The first part of it is just the strings. So, and then in February is our winter concert, and he's calling it American Roots, and that it's not a Pops concert, but it is sort of like a Pops concert in that it's a whole bunch of smaller works by, you know, famous 20th century composers, Aaron Copland, Ives, Samuel Barber, another Copland, and then course, Troy doesn't like to do a concert without a little John Williams, so we'll have that there too. And a bunch of other stuff. I think it'll be a lot of fun. And then, of course, we always have in the spring our symphony showcase, which is chamber music, and that'll be in March. And then at the end of April, we have our spring concert featuring the big work that I'm excited about is the choral work, because I like to sing in the chorus, and it's Bernstein's Chichester Psalms. And that's a beautiful piece with we're bringing a boy soprano up for to be the soloist for that. He's coming from Seattle. There will also be a Mozart piece, the Jupiter Symphony, and then another big treat is the winner of our 2016 youth solo competition is Teza Haddock. I don't know if you've ever seen him play. He's small but mighty, and he'll be playing a Mozart piece. He won our competition and gets to do a solo with the symphony. And he won a couple years ago and got to do the same thing then, too. So he's a very, very talented young man. And then our final concert is our Pops. And Troy is giving in to his inner John Williams fan. So it's going to be all John Williams. He's calling it a tribute to John Williams. And he hasn't quite decided what all the pieces will be. But there's so much to choose from. It'll be great.
Big season.
Yes.
Do you know off the top of your head how many years the symphony has been?
Well, yeah, we just had the 50th. What?
50th. Wow.
How many years was that? 3 years ago? Something like that. Yeah.
Congratulations on that. You know, and that's a body of work that I just think of how many people over all those years that have taken their turns and been part of it and contributed to make sure this thing continues to not just perpetuate but to grow and to get better. So hats off to everybody involved. How big is the symphony this year? About how many people involved?
Well, it depends on the concert. So the first one is kind of smaller because it's mostly a string ensemble, except for the Schumann has more. But then the John Williams thing will be massive. There will be over 70 musicians on stage, as there were for our last Pops concert. So I'd say the first concert will probably be somewhere in the 60s in terms of numbers of musicians. And, of course, the choral concerts, then we have the whole chorus, which can be as many as 100 people.
And then you're the executive director.
Yes.
So there are some people who are actually tasked with a whole lot of work here to make this happen.
Yes.
So tell us about that organization.
Well, our staff, we have a very small staff.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to me, Teresa Bleakley, she kind of heads up most of our youth programs, including our student symphony. And may I make a plug for that right now? We have a brand new director for our student symphony, and it's a well-known, beloved person in Juneau, Mr. Shaw, who is our premier string teacher, who we're so excited to have him, and he'll be bringing a lot of his students with him. And I think that's going to really make the student symphony just go over the top. And actually, he's going to have his first sort of loosey-goosey fun. They call it a reading rehearsal, no commitment. Just come and bring your music stand, bring your instrument, and read through some stuff. And that's going to be Monday night, 6 to 8 p.m. at the Montessori School. And we got a few more details to work out, but that's going to be our launch, is Monday, Labor Day.
So for people to be involved, I know the best way people can be involved is to buy tickets and show up for the events, for the music itself.
Yes.
And in this case, you've got the fundraiser, and we'll end talking about that again. But are there other ways that people can be involved and support the year-round effort that's required to have a symphony season?
You know, we use over 20 volunteers at every concert, and if you want to keep up with us, be sure to go to our website and click the little link that says join the email list, because then you'll know about all our volunteer opportunities. And I would also urge things like the chorus, no auditions, you know, if you can kind of read music, and definitely you want to be able to carry a tune. But other than that, we don't have a lot of requirements, and it's a really wonderful experience. And our choral master is Bruce Simonson. And he will be directing all the rehearsals for that as well. And he's really beloved by his choirs. He runs the Juno Box Society and does this for us. Plus, he's our other staff member as our production manager. He's the one that runs around backstage and makes sure our concerts all go smoothly. And so we're happy to have him in a couple different capacities.
Well, let's wrap this up where we began. Tell us about the cruise, just to get the details out there for people.
Saturday. We depart from Stater Harbor in Auk Bay. The cruise is from 2 to 5. We start boarding at 1:30. You'll park up at the Auk Bay School parking lot. But I suggest you definitely want to get a ticket in advance because we're almost out. So you can go to Hearthside, or you can go to the Jack, or you can go to our website, and there's a little thing to click there, and you can buy your ticket online.
Very good. Anything else that you wanted to mention?
No, I think you hit the high points, and as long as we have whales and good weather, it'll be a fabulous
cruise. Even if there isn't good weather, and even if the whales are a bit of a no-show, you're going to have a blast. It's going to be great.
Great,
people, great music. Yes. Who? What's not to like about a cruise
like
in Southeast Alaska?
So, thanks, Jamie.
Laura Haywood, Executive Director with the Juneau Symphony, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, featuring the new flagship cafe and bakery located at 130 Front Street in downtown Juneau. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
That's a lot of bags.
It's just plastic bags, and it's so simple because they're, like, everywhere.
That's Alexandra. She's one of about 20 East Anchorage High School students who are spending their lunch period today working as a cheerful assembly line. Teens stand side by side and flatten and cut used plastic grocery-style bags into circular strips. Next, those strips are tied together piece by piece and rolled up into a ball of plarn, plastic yarn. Destiny is in the 10th grade and says she already had experience with the next step, crocheting.
I feel as though my expertise is helping people, and if I get to use crochet in it and I already know how to do it, then it's awesome.
All of this work is to produce as many durable adult-sized sleeping mats as these teens can. They're doing this as part of the East High Interact Club, a civic engagement program affiliated with Anchorage East Rotary. These mats will be donated to the Brother Francis Shelter to be given to the homeless, and any extras will help stock local emergency shelters. Community members have been donating used bags, so students like Brianna have stepped up to keep up.
And I'm surprised I'm not called the bag lady yet, because I take them home and I do them, so it's really cool. And my family helps out too.
Each sleeping mat repurposes 700 plastic bags. Here's Alexandra again.
We don't have a set goal, but, as long as we have bags, we're making them.
I am Shanna Sheehy.
Do you know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen to this story again at spiritofyouth.org.
Thank you, Jeff Brown, for producing a Juneau Afternoon. Weather forecast for this evening, partly cloudy, looks pretty nice. Get out and enjoy it. And you're listening to KTOO in Juneau.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K2